Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the program. Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Yes, the last weekend of 2017 here in the Crescent City and elsewhere. You know, friends, here at NOLA Drinks, we don't play golf, so we played a lot less golf than Obama did. But that's not anywhere near as much as someone else that I can think of who played a lot of golf this year. We got a good show coming up for you here, friends. Today, last show, as I said, of the year 2017. And thanks for tuning in. We've been at this here at NOLA Drinks for about a year and a half now. 2017 was really a lot of fun. Lots of great shows. You can always go back and check out our podcast. It's available on iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, and at noladrinks.com. And to catch some of the past shows, it had a lot of great guests. I thank all those folks, which was really wonderful. A lot of great conversations. Look forward to a lot more coming up in 2018. As I mentioned, good show today. It's New Year's, friends, coming up here Sunday evening, of course. And one of the things we're talking about here on the show, our featured interview today, is with Dr. Michael Nisley of Bubliotech. And Dr. Mike, as a lot of people call him, he's actually a surgeon, an emergency room surgeon at the VA hospital here in town. But he also does a side gig, if you will, or I was teasing him, which one does he moonlight? Because he works a lot in the ER in the evenings. So maybe he moonlights as a surgeon. Bubliotech is an interesting organization. It's about promoting and sharing and educating about champagne. And Mike is a local expert on champagne. So what better to talk about for New Year's Eve than bubbles. So we interview Mike. We talk quite a bit about champagne, how it's made, what's different about champagne. We really focus on champagne over the broader category of sparkling wine, of which, of course, it's a part, but we differentiate the two, what that means. And then Mike is also very into grower champagne, which means a little bit more of, say, the farmer or the vineyard, the estate that are growing the grapes in question, making their own champagne. What happens often, and he explains this and does a better job than I do, talking about how often, you know, folks, the big houses, the big champagne houses, source their grapes from across the Champagne region from multiple growers, and they achieve a great, you know, consistency and balance of style and these things, and we touch on that. But talking about the grower style, if you are grower champagne, is where the growers themselves hold some back. Maybe they don't sell to the big houses or dedicate their own crop entirely to producing their own champagne. It's a really interesting category, so we discuss some of that. We also touch on a little bit about how you don't have to break the bank to get a good bottle of champagne here to cork on New Year's Eve or any other time. We recorded that at Sylvain, thanks to our good friends at Sylvain Restaurant, 625 Chartist Street in the French Quarter, right there at St. Peter and Chartist, right next to Jackson Square. And we taped there. I appreciate that, as they often let me do. And so then we were joined by Chris Zulueta, who is the man that runs the beverage program there at Sylvain, and their new general manager, Ali Grebe. And we spent a couple segments talking to them about just some things they got going on, winter menu, some winter cocktails, some fun stuff like that. And hey, friends, I'm not much into the world of prognostication and prediction, but we'll close out the show and talk about maybe some things that we'll see coming up in 2018, or what I'd like to say is things I'd like to see, maybe is a better way to put it, and some things I'd like to see go away. We'll talk about that too. Lots of stuff, as always, as you can imagine, going on here in town, as there always is in New Orleans. And, you know, of course, the New Year's Eve weekend is no exception. Let's see. Well, of course, let's talk a little bit about football, because we got some big football coming up. If you're listening in podcast land, just bear with me. If you're listening here, either in the podcast or on the radio here in New Orleans, you know what I'm about to say. 3:30 Sunday, big game. Our New Orleans Saints going up against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. At the same time, our rival, the Carolina Panthers, playing our other rival, the Atlanta Falcons, whom we dispatched last week. Now, basically, the upshot of this is, as probably everybody here knows, if we win, Saints win, we clinch the NFC North, means we will host a home game against one of the wildcard teams next weekend. If we lose and Carolina wins, that means that we're going to be one of the wild cards, most likely. I think it looks like we'll have to head out to LA to play the Rams. If both teams lose or both teams win, we have the tiebreaker against Carolina. So that means, you know, scenario A that I just mentioned, NFC North champs and hosting a game against one of the wild cards. Also, the Sugar Bowl, of course, coming up here on New Year's Day, as it always is, 7:45. Talk about rivals from our part of the world. Alabama Crimson Tide against the Clemson Tigers, playing for the third year in a row it's three times in the past four. I think it's the third year in a row in the college football playoff, but not in the finals this time. And then always have to mention, because of my familial connection due to my wife as an alumni and most of her family, LSU in the Citrus Bowl. That's also on New Year's Day, 12 o'clock our time again. against the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. That'll be a lot of fun also. So lots of good football, lots of good food coming up. That I know that's going on because we're just going to stay home and cook and eat and watch football. So there you go. Let's see. We got, of course, the New Year's Eve celebration that's going on. Part of the Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve, and it's a Jackson Square celebration. So as they kind of jump around from city to city, one of the landing spots is going to be in New Orleans. Of course, we started doing this not too long ago. There's going to be a drop. We don't do the ball drop here. That's in New York or the Apple, whatever that is. We do the fleur-de-lis drop here because we're in New Orleans. There's going to be fireworks. There's going to be music. That's free right there at Jackson Square. Weather's looking a little dicey, so I hope the weather holds out. That should be a lot of fun. I kind of hope they, you know, in time, a couple of years past, the music's been a little bit kind of shaky to me just because I think kind of talking about, you know, not necessarily having a lot of local acts. I hope there's a little more New Orleans going on in that celebration, but still fun nonetheless. That'll be free out there at Jackson Square, as I mentioned. If you're looking for a kid-friendly, family-friendly event, this is always a lot of fun. You can go to Audubon Zoo, which is on New Year's Eve during the day, 10:30 to 12:30. So 10:30 in the morning to 12:30 p.m. And it's kid-friendly New Year's celebration, music, games, prizes. There's a countdown to noon. That's kind of good for me. I think they should say, you know, family-friendly for kids and also for old folks like me who, you know, I can count down to noon and then take a nap. That sounds great. Louisiana Trolls Museum's got something going on. That's a lot of fun. The Allstate Fan Fest on New Year's Eve. So that tees up the Sugar Bowl. That's right there at Jack's Brewery. I'm assuming they're setting that up in the parking lot. You can go check that out. A lot of interactive fan stuff and things like that. That's a lot of fun. Not too late, friends, to check out the Revion Dinner Series. We talked about that quite a bit last week, so you can check the podcast out on that, The Tradition. I explained some of that stuff, but great opportunity to go get price-fixed meals at some of the finest restaurants, both old and new, traditional and contemporary, all that good stuff here in town. And yeah, the best place to go find out information on that is followyourjoy.com. Great way to go. That basically runs through the end of the month, and so I'm sure some folks are doing stuff on New Year's Eve and the next few days leading up to that. So yeah, go check that out. Great places. Go to Galatoire's, you know, go to a new place like Curio. A lot of cool places. Everything in between, a lot of fun that way. So that should be good. So get out there and eat. We've done a couple. It's been a lot of fun. It's always really, really good. And there is the little part two Revion on the Rocks where people are doing winter cocktails. There's about 20 bars and restaurant bars and stuff that are doing special cocktails. So check that out as well. Let's see. We also wanted to mention some live music coming up that I want to flag your attention to. Our friends over there at Little Gem Saloon, Nick Bazan and gang, starting this evening through Saturday evening. The great Deacon John, of course. Deacon John and the Ivories are going to be playing a three-night gig. You can always get food. They do a little dinner service that goes on there. Tickets, I think, are about $15 or so. And Little Gem Saloon is right there, 445 South Rampart Street, which is right at the corner of Poydras. And it's right there in the heart of what was really the birthplace of jazz, Storyville area. And that's going to be a lot of fun. And then on New Year's Eve, you can go to the same establishment, New Year's Eve Celebration, which is a price fixed meal from 5 to 11, $80. And it's going to be featuring the great Kermit Ruffins. So good way to go over there, have a nice paired meal, see Kermit, and ring in the New Year at the Little Gem Saloon. That should be a lot of fun as well. Of course, lots of other things, friends, going on around town. I always encourage you to check out La Fete, L-A, and the new word, F-E-T-E, New Orleans. And that's our good friend Frank Stansberry's daily e-newsletter that he puts out. There's too much going down for me to run down all kinds of stuff, but you know, it's New Orleans and it's the holidays. But Frank always has a good rundown of things going on. And so, you know, that's a good place to find out about a lot of the holiday home tours that are going on. Great time of year to go wander around. You can connect with the Historic New Orleans Collection and see what they have. They are the ones who do a lot of the home tours. Go see some of the beautiful courtyards, beautiful holiday decorations in the French Quarter. And really neat stuff to do there. You know, it's just a nice time to be out in town, friends. Just been out in the past couple days, kind of pretending to work here and there, not really. And it's been a bit cold, maybe a bit damp, but hey, just put on a jacket and it's just fun. It's just fun walking around the French Quarter. It's fun walking around uptown. A lot of people out, people smiles on their faces, good music. Happened to wander just past Lafitte's there, of course, the oldest continuously run bar in the country. And wow, they just had a cool brass band yesterday in the middle of the day outside, and check them out for a while. Just lots of fun stuff. So get out there and check that stuff out, friends. And, you know, it's going to be a good 2018 here. It was a good 2017 for the most part. Always good, always bad, a little bit of both. But, hey, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to be back with Dr. Michael Knisley of Bubbliotech. And then we're going to chat with Chris and Allie from Sylvain. And then we're going to close out the show in 2017 here at NOLA Drinks. Friends, come on back.
Org Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be, however you're listening to the show today. Thank you very much for tuning in. Happy holidays, everybody. As you know, we are here in the week between Christmas and New Year's, and my next guest is perfectly fitting given the upcoming holiday here on New Year's coming up this weekend. Pleased to be joined by my friend, Dr. Michael Nisley from Bibliotech. Mike, good to see you.
Great to see you. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. It's great. It's been a little while. When was the last, 8, 9 months ago?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. That's good. And I mean, I see you around town. Last time I saw you was at Boudin Bourbon and Beer, I think, if I remember right.
Indeed. One of the great events we have every year.
Yeah, absolutely. How did, you know, and we kind of saw you in passing on, I think we were on our way out. How did the rest of that night go for you?
I don't know that I stayed too much longer either. It was, it had been a long week. So I went and got my fill and moved on. But good times.
Yeah, it's a cool event, and it's really a lot of fun. I like how it's organized. You really don't have to wait that long to get your hands around a glass or, you know, get your hands under a plate.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun, even given that there's, what, I think 5,000 people or 5,000 tickets sold.
Yeah, moving it to Champion Square a few years back was one of the best things they did.
A really good move, no doubt. And there's some smarts. And there's also a budget behind that event, which also, I think, helps out a little bit, too, for sure. Well, one of the things that you do, Mike, let's talk about this. You were on about 9 months ago, but let's get a little bit of your background, because we're going to talk about champagne for New Year's, as I said. But you also moonlight as a physician.
I do.
Moonlighting, if that's fair to say that, because you work at night a lot.
Yeah, I guess we have to look at, you know, the percentage of my time that's spent with each of these endeavors. But yeah, that's the profession. But the passion and the thing that keeps me sane when everything's going crazy in the ER is the wine and champagne in particular. So.
How did you get into champagne? We'll go that way. We'll get away from the moonlighting.
Sure.
We'll get to your profession in champagne.
Yes. Happier topics.
How did you get into it?
It started as a little bit of a fluke. A good friend from quite a while ago, when I lived in Chicago, was a big champagne fan and took me out one night. And it really was the first time that I'd had champagne that I recognized as really good wine. And it was at the longtime institution in Chicago, Pops for Champagne.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a champagne bar that really did focus on quality wine and wasn't like a lot of places that you still see around the country these days that are champagne bars, but really just sort of focus on the labels and the big houses and not really about quality wine. And they had great staff there who loved to educate people, and I just really sort of fell into it that way. And the more I learned about it, the more fascinated I became, and the rest is history.
And then you, at that point, took some trips to France, right?
I did. Made some visits over there to start seeing the producers, learning more about the place itself and the people who make it. And this really coincided with, you know, the last decade and a half in America where this appearance of grower champagne really came about and took off. And we've seen as Pops was doing back then a greater and greater availability of wine from these smaller producers that really helps you approach and understand and enjoy champagne as a wine first and foremost, and not just the thing you toss back at a toast at a party and move on.
Right. And that's a really good point. And I think one of the things that we'll probably get to this in the segment after this one is you touched on something, Mike, and we'll come back to it. But the idea that I think a lot of people associate champagne with maybe a small number of labels that we typically see here in the States anyway, and what's available. And as you said, the grower style of champagne or growers, there's a whole lot of mom and pop labels out there that we're starting to see more of in the marketplace here that listeners can avail themselves of. But let me ask you this before we get into that, because that's kind of what one of our themes for the show today. But for those who are listening who maybe don't know, we also tend to sort of flippantly throw around the term champagne to apply to the broader world of sparkling. And what can you tell people a little bit about what separates champagne from sparkling wine in the bigger category?
Sure. And this to me is a really important topic. And, I've been doing my classes around town here for coming up on 3 years now. And I still, every single one of them starts out with this, not just because there's always a few new people there. Certainly the people who come to my classes all the time know this, but it's just an important distinction. Champagne refers specifically to the sparkling wine produced via a certain method in a certain region in France, that being Champagne.
Champagne.
In the rest of France, sparkling wine goes by a couple different terms. It can be called a Cremant or a Vin Mousseux. In Spain, you've got Cava. In Italy, you've got Prosecco and Franciacorta. And it's a testament to the just outright effectiveness of the marketing machine of the champagne houses. And I'm not even talking about modern days. I'm talking about back in the 1800s,
right,
when they made
right.
a worldwide name for the wines from their region, which really aren't even wines that we would recognize today. It's changed that much. But that's why it became sort of a generic term, sort of like Kleenex for tissue and that sort of
thing. Q-tip, right, exactly.
And it's a disservice all around to use it like that as a generic term. It sort of ignores the importance of geography and place in wine, and anybody who really cares about a lot of wine, with bubbles or otherwise, knows that it all goes back to that and where things started in the vineyard. And that also takes away from the wines from other regions when they're just generically referred to as champagne instead of where they're properly from. And you also, a lot of times I'll hear, the sort of, oh, yeah, I don't really like champagne. It always gives me a headache. And almost invariably they're referring to, some very cheap, poorly made wine that is certainly not from Champagne. And
lots of sugar.
Yeah, lots of sugar, and when you pour some of the real stuff or quality sparkling wine from any other region for them, they're like, oh wow, this is actually really good. And
Mike, let's make a distinction here too, because you just said it really well. I think a lot of people, as they learn what champagne is, as you just described, and then what we sometimes end up with is then people also maybe secondarily get this opinion that anything that's not champagne is inferior. There's a lot of really good sparklings out there. There's a lot of really nice Proseccos, as you said, from Italy, nice Cavas, nice sparkling wine that comes out of California that works really, really well. So what we're saying here is we're not saying this stuff is bad. We're just saying it's different and it's distinctive.
Yes. And on the big house and grower topic, as I said, it's a measure of the effectiveness to which they sold themselves back in the day. And it's also important to understand that most of my events that I do here, I do use the grower champagne because those are the ones that really fascinate me the most and really help you dive into the region at a much finer level. Finer meaning smaller data points, not finer wine.
right. They're okay. Yeah,
but
right.
The reality is, neither would be possible without the other. The big houses can't make the wine they do in quantities without the thousands and thousands and thousands of growers that provide them grapes. And the grower producers that we're really enjoying a renaissance with now here in America wouldn't have the platform they do were it not for all of the fame that the big houses had brought to the region back in the day. And it's really important to understand all of that. I don't ever wish to say that only champagne is good. I don't ever wish to say that no big houses are good. It really is. There's quality wine being made at all levels and in all regions
and
around the world.
Good and bad stuff being
and you
made.
Just,
and,
you, right. need, yep. you need to find somebody who knows what's out there and can lead you to the ones you're really going to like.
It'd help you explore your palate and find out what you like. That's a really good point. And what we're going to do, Mike, we're going to take a break here in just a second, because then I'd like to come back and talk a little bit about the traditional method that you mentioned, the champagne method, and what that is and how that then may differ. And then we'll talk about the grower style of champagne and what that means. And I think one of the points that we're also going to articulate here a little bit is a lot of people also think, hey, you got a winery, you can make sparkling wine, you can make champagne. There's a lot that actually has to, it's not just, you know, hey, I make wine too, so I can make champagne as well. It's a little trickier than that.
Absolutely.
So we'll get into a little bit of that stuff in just a second. Friends, we're here chatting with Dr. Michael Misley of Bubbliotech, our local champagne expert, doctor of medicine, doctor of champagne. We're going to say that too. And we're going to talk a little bit about what they do at Bubbliotech as well. So friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on back.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
All All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yes, here on the Noel Drink Show, we are joined by our good friend, Dr. Michael Nisley of Bubbliotech. And as you know, as you may gather by the name, if you're just tuning in right now, we're talking about champagne and sparkling wine. We're talking about the broader world of champagne and what it is. And Mike, I mentioned before we took the break here, coming back, and let's just kind of quickly tell people, what is the champagne method and how does that maybe differ from other sparkling wine production methodology?
All right. Great topic. So the champagne method is a method where it's how we get the bubbles in the wine, but it also affects more than just the fact that there's bubbles in the wine. You can put bubbles in the wine in different ways. You could do what essentially amounts to a industrial-sized soda stream and inject the gas into the wine if you wanted to. There's also, you hear a lot about pet nats these days, which is simply a wine that has not fully fermented out all the sugar in the original grape juice, and then it's bottled. And because it's in the bottle, the fermentation finishes and the carbon dioxide that's formed as part of that stays in the bottle. You still have the sediment in those bottles, and those are typically not aged as long. You're going to drink those younger and fresher. Champagne, though, goes through some extra steps that make it a more refined and complex wine than you get with those. First and foremost, it starts as wine first, and which sounds simple, but you need to have made very good still wine to make the best possible champagne. And
let me ask you this question, Mike, too, because I think for listeners, lots of times the base wine for champagne, it's not made to the same spec that you would make like a white still wine that you would normally drink.
Not at all. And it's because champagne is a cool climate and you don't get the same degree of ripeness. And so when you're drinking these wines, when they're still in it's referred to as Van Clair, when they're still wines, these are very, very highly acidic. They really are not balanced. The flavors in terms of fruit and flower and the minerality and everything is sort of like turned all the way up.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs time and it needs the process to turn it into that. And so to back up just a little bit, a couple of the really unique things about champagne before we get into the nitty-gritty of the method is it's made from three main grapes. And what is atypical is that one of those is a white grape, Chardonnay, but the other two are red grapes, Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier. And those are blended together, and anybody who's had, you know, more than a little bit of champagne knows that most of it is a white wine. And that's because in the Champagne region and in other sparkling wine producing regions, the Pinots are pressed with no skin contact so that they don't pick up color. So you still have the flavors right that you associate with Pinot, but you still have a white wine. So we're routinely blending white and red grapes together in the Champagne region. And beyond that, we're routinely blending wine for multiple years together in the same bottle. There's one base wine that's in there, but then there's also reserve wine that is required to be held back every single year, even in the best vintages, to blend into the wines moving forward. One, it helps maintain the style and the complexity because you have that older wine blended in with the younger wine. And it's also a bit of an insurance policy because it is a difficult wine growing region and
right,
you have some very bad years sometimes and you still want to be able to produce wine. And having that reserve wine from years that were better in the past can sort of smooth out those edges there.
Right, lets you hedge your bet, right?
Yes.
And let's make sure we make that distinction too, Mike, in that people sometimes maybe associate the term with wine, still wine, at non-vintage, or we've now gone to this term multi-vintage, but whatever, that's a bad thing. And in the world of champagne, that's the norm.
That is the norm. If you don't see a four-digit year on the front label and it's not clearly the year the house was formed, you're not drinking 1867 champagne.
Right.
If you don't see a four-digit year on the front, you can assume for the most part that it is what's referred to as a non-vintage or multi-vintage wine, meaning that it does have wine from multiple years blended into it. So they make those blends and then they put those in the bottle and they add an additional amount of yeast and sugar and then they close that bottle up. So before, when it went through its first fermentation, it was an open system, basically, and that carbon dioxide just goes into the atmosphere and doesn't stay in the wine. But now that it's in a closed bottle, the same fermentation happens, the same carbon dioxide is produced, but it has nowhere to go, so it stays in the solution and we have fizzy wine.
What kind of alcohol level do we start with the base wine, typically?
Around 11 to 13, depending on the vintage, depending on the producer. And you'll go up about a degree or a degree and a half with the second in-bottle fermentation.
Yep.
So that's great. Now we have bubbly wine, but we also have dead yeast cells in our wine. And the wine has to sit on that for minimum periods of time. 15 years is the minimum for a non-vintage wine, and 3 years for one that's going to be a vintage wine or include only wine from 1 year. Those are bare minimums. If they want to age it longer and increase the complexity of the wine and change the flavors, that's the winemaker's prerogative. Mm-hmm. They go through a process then where they slowly turn the bottles upside down so the yeast is all in the neck. And then one of the last steps is disgorgement, which is when the cap or the cork is taken off. The pressure forces that yeast out. So now we have clear wine again. But we also lost some wine out of the bottle, so we need to top it off. And the final step in true winemaking with champagne is that, and that's called dosage. And that's when they add either just the base wine back in, keeping it a completely bone-dry champagne, or, as we already talked about, these wines were very acidic going into the bottle. And you need to balance that out. So more commonly, it's base wine with a sugar solution that goes in to top the bottle off and balance that wine out. Brut, as you've seen on many labels, is anything between 0 and 12 grams of sugar per liter of wine.
And that's a pretty good range.
That is a pretty good range. They have a lot of leeway there. Mm-hmm. But even with those styles, even the ones that go all the way to the very top there, if it's, and this is, you know, where winemaking talent comes in, the winemaker needs to know how much is right for each wine because every vintage and blend is different. If they've judged that right, you still, even if it's got 10 or 12 grams in it, you don't perceive that as a sweet wine. There's no residual
acidic,
sugar
right?
there.
Yes. If you have to stand up to that acid backbone, and I think, and also as you're saying too, I believe that flexibility is also required to maintain a consistency of style and flavor profile from year to year or
correct.
Production wave to production wave.
Correct. And that's sort of the quick overview of how it happens. But imagine that each of those steps is decisions that the winemaker gets to make in terms of how they're going to do it, what their style is going to be. Are they going to use steel? Are they going to use wood? What type of liqueur are they using for the dosage? There's many, many different steps there where the winemaker gets to choose. So from a relatively compact wine region using primarily three grapes, we get, because of the process of how champagne is made and all of those extra steps there, we get this just astounding array of different styles of wine.
Right.
And that's right. Really, when that all clicked for me, back in the day, that was when I really wanted to dive into it and learn all I could about it.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think, because what we're talking about, what maybe is not necessarily intuitive to people when we think about old world wines, French wines in particular, there's a lot of limitations on alcohol level, types of grapes that you can use, some other considerations in the production method. And that's the case with champagne, but there's a flexibility in the methodology also that differs from making still wine in many regions in France that I think people are not particularly familiar with that allow both the creative aspect as well as the quality control aspect.
Right. And what I'm looking for in a champagne is one that shows evidence that the winemaker is, you know, from the very beginning fundamental steps making good wine. Because at the end of the day, you know, yes, the bubbles are an inextricable part of the whole thing, but it's the ones where it started in the vineyard and in the cellar with the very first steps to be very good wine. And then, you know, you can approach it as a wine and pair it and use it the same way that you would a still wine.
Right. Garbage in, garbage out, right?
Yes.
Let's do this, Mike. Let's take another break here, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about grower champagne a little bit, and then we're also going to get into a little bit about the holiday selections that you may have. I think, as we were talking about before we went on the air, you don't have to break the bank to get a good bottle of champagne. We're going to talk about that, and we're also going to talk with Mike about how to connect with Bubliotech here in New Orleans when you're paying us a visit or if you live here in town. Take a little break here on the Noah Drink Show. Friends, come on back.
Soothe our soul, we can taste all night long. Come on and let the good times.
Hey ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. We are chatting with Dr. Michael Knisely of Bubbly Tech, and we are talking about champagne. Yes, friends, it is almost New Year's. It is almost 2018, so the quintessential beverage to have to toast and ring in the New Year is, of course, champagne. And Mike was just running down for us the overview of the production method of how champagne is made and contrasting that a little bit with how perhaps other sparklings are made. We didn't go too far down that road. Conversation for another time. But one of the things that we were talking about during the break here, friends, is that, you know, you're probably getting this picture from the conversation that we just had about there's a lot that goes into this. And what often people maybe misunderstand is as a small winery that makes still wines, making champagne requires a lot of other things. Like we were talking about, Mike, you just mentioned the grapes. You grow to a style that's different than making still wines, but the equipment is also different. So a small winery, say in California, is not going to make, they're not just going to jump into the sparkling game. That's just not going to happen.
It's right.
Not cost effective.
Right. There is so much that goes into this, both with time and equipment, that just is one of the biggest barriers to people doing that. They'll grow, you know, even when you go visit winemakers, as is the case with still wine, even, you know, the grapes that are grown in different places and different exposures and whatnot, will go into totally different wines and will be harvested in different manners and different times to allow it to become the wine that they want it to be. And so you can't just wake up one day and be like, oh, we're going to use our grapes that we make our regular Chardonnay out of and make some fizzy.
Yeah, we'll take the leftovers and make champagne, right? Or we're going to take 20%. You have to grow that way and you have to produce that way from start to finish. It's not, you can't divide the harvest up and say, I'm doing this. And, you know, one of the things that I learned some years ago in the wine industry in California is for the reasons that we're talking about, a lot of wineries will have a sparkling. And they're sparkling. Oftentimes, there's an origin story in some of these things that come up behind the sparkling, and I won't name names, but there was one big house. Well, I will name this name. Wybell was making sparkling for almost everyone, about 80-90% of the market. And you would go from one winery to the next, and you would say, "Oh, this is our sparkling," and everybody had the same sparkling from Wybell. It tasted exactly the same. It was the same thing. They would have a story as to why, and you would say, "Oh, really interesting. How do you make it? Where's the equipment?" And then people kind of quiet down a little bit. And I'm not trying to pick on anybody. It's not a bad thing. It's great to have a sparkling. It's a great way to lead into a flight of wines in a tasting room. But the reality of it is, very much as we're talking about, is that you can't just take on this production, and it's not cost effective. It's not practical for a small winery to get into sparkling unless they fully get into making sparkling.
Right. And you really want to know the true story behind what you're drinking, whether it's wine, whether it's whether it's whiskey, whatever it is. I should say that sort of process does exist in Champagne and is a well-recognized thing where there are, you know, cooperatives or whatnot where they'll, in the village, there's one press house and whatnot where everybody sort of uses that together and then either takes their grapes back and does it themselves, or some of those cooperatives actually take care of the whole process, and mm-hmm. then at the end you take it back. In Champagne, we're fortunate in that there's a whole series of codes that are on the labels, and if they've produced it that way, which can still be very great.
Nothing
wine,
wrong with it, right? There's nothing wrong with that.
You actually can look on the label and figure that out. Whereas it's a lot more opaque here in the U.S.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. This is not the Da Vinci Code like it is here. But let's talk about grower champagne, Mike, because I know that's something that you emphasize in your program and what it is that you do, and maybe tell people a little bit about what that is, and then we're tasting a lovely expression of it at the moment.
All right. So grower champagne refers to wines in distinction to the big houses. So grower champagne meaning that it's wines produced by people from grapes that they've grown themselves on their own land. And that's a very precise definition of it. But there's also this sort of idea that there are some producers who, for various reasons and various intricate inheritance laws in France and whatnot, technically wouldn't fall into that definition because maybe they're buying grapes from a family member who now owns the vineyards, but they actually do all the vineyard work themselves. So it's not a going back to those codes, the code for grower champagne is RM or récoltant manipulant. But in instances where they're still doing the exact same thing, where they're doing all the vineyard work themselves, making wine from what is essentially estate fruit, but they have to buy it from a family member or something, they have to put NM on the label. So you have to know the story behind the wine. You can't just go by that. But the grower champagnes is said in distinction to the big houses. The big houses, to make the volumes that they do, 30 million bottles a year, they have to buy grapes from all over the region from many different people. And they... because of that, you have different wine. You have less control over how the grapes are handled and whatnot. And it also doesn't taste like one spot. You recognize those champagnes as having this sort of taste of champagne that tastes different from cava, that tastes different from prosecco. But it's a bigger picture. The growers typically are based in one village or a couple nearby villages. They have much smaller vineyards to work with. And so when you drink those wines, you get into that level where, oh, this is a Chardonnay that tastes like it's from Avize, a Grand Cru village, or this is Pinot Noir that tastes like it's from Ambonnet. And because those people are getting more prominence to us and we have more access to those wines, we're understanding the terroir of Champagne in a way that we weren't able to before. The wine that I poured for you here today is from Champagne Guibera, who's based in Cremont in the middle of the Côte de Blanc, where a lot of the Chardonnay is grown. And this one is 100% Chardonnay, a Blanc de Blanc. And they're a good example of what I mentioned earlier, that there's sort of this necessary balance between the growers and the big houses. These guys keep about 20% of the fruit that they grow for themselves for this estate bottled wine. Around 20,000 bottles a year is their entire production.
Wow, okay.
And they sell the other approximately 80% off to long-term contracts that they've had with big houses who want access to the Chardonnay from Grand Cru villages. These guys, it being a small operation like that, they literally make it in the garage. Their tanks are there in the garage at the house, and the cellars where they age these wines are dug underneath the family house. And this... you know, necessarily tastes different from, you know, the big house that they sell these grapes to that would make a Blanc de Blanc out of those grapes, because those are going to be blended with grapes from other places. And so you lose that sense
of place, as
yes,
you said.
Exactly.
And you know, I think it's worth emphasizing that, you know, it is remarkable what the big houses do and how they actually work with all these variables, as you just described, Mike, and then still achieve that consistency. That's not easy. That's also hard. It's really hard.
It is.
And you know, and so we're not knocking anything like that. What we're seeing here in grower champagne, I guess maybe I'll characterize it this way, is picture more of a small winery that goes, even though we're not talking about vintage, but does sort of go vintage to vintage, where the Cabernet from 07 will taste different than the Cabernet from 08. These wines are going to distinctively vary to a certain degree because of that specificity of place and time to a degree.
Right. And you'll see more and more that they're sort of showcasing that a little bit. Even this label here says Prism 11 on it, and as I mentioned earlier, you know, 4-digit year means vintage champagne. But what you're seeing more and more with a lot of the growers is you'll see a 2-digit year there on the front label, and that's still a blend of multiple years. In this case, this is 85 or 90% from 2011, and then the rest is some reserve wine from the prior year. But they're doing that because they make this particular blend from these certain plots every year. But they want you to understand, you know, the vintage-to-vintage variation and that it's not going to taste the same every year because it's wine. It's right. Not some industrially produced same every year for time immemorial thing that they're going for.
Right.
And they're being much more transparent about that. And as a wine drinker, that's a great thing because that was one of the drawbacks to understanding champagne a lot, especially if you wanted to do any sorts of pairings or anything, because you didn't know in those non-vintage wines how long that had been sitting there, if there were no right. dates anywhere on the front or the back label.
Right.
And here, these guys in this bottle's case and in a lot of producers, we've got that 2-digit year on the front, so I know what the base wine is, but I also have a disgorgement date on the back. And this wine has a great texture and complexity to it. And that's because even though it's a non-vintage wine, this was a base 2011 and it was disgorged in September of 16.
Mike, do me a favor. Let's hold that thought. Let's hold that thought because we're going to come back. So we'll take a little break here on the show, friends. We're talking about a lovely grower champagne and we're going to talk to Mike a little bit more about it. Come on back.
Looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful, fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose, Coquille Blanc. Cheers.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. We are talking with Dr. Michael Nisley of Bibliotech. And Mike, sorry I had to cut you off there because I had to take care of a little bit of business, as we do here on the show. But we were talking about the base wine on the Gibora being an 11, but you can see by reading the back label that the disgorgement was in 16.
Right, and that makes a difference in terms of how the wine, you know, the aromas and the tastes and even the mouthfeel and texture that you get from this wine. And particularly if you're going to be pairing that with food, those are things that you want to know. It's going to be delicious. It's just going to taste different than it would have if it spent less time in the bottle. And wines also age differently after disgorgement than they do beforehand. And so when you're really interested in understanding the wines as you taste them, that's important information to have.
Mm-hmm. Great. One of the things, and we'll do this again because we can talk further about this style, which I find very, very fascinating. Friends, we are seeing more of grower champagnes on the market here in Louisiana and elsewhere in the States and elsewhere in general. So be on the lookout for those. One of the things that I want to emphasize here is with the holiday coming up and people going out and thinking, wow, champagne, it's kind of expensive. And hey, yeah, you can go out and get a bottle of Prosecco, you can go out and get a bottle of Cava for not a whole lot of money. And sometimes those are fine. But if you wanted to splurge a little bit, you don't necessarily have to mortgage your soul, Mike, to get a nice bottle of champagne these days for a special occasion.
Right. I think one of the things, especially in the last year to 18 months, there's been a lot of new champagne come into the market for a variety of reasons. And fortunately for us, a lot of those are coming in at lower price points. We may have seen these price points already where you're looking at upper 30s, low 40s on the shelf for the honest-to-goodness champagne. But what's changed in the last year and a half as more of these have come in is that we're also seeing the quality at that price point go up as some things exit the market and new ones come in. So there's more on the way. I have been talking with different people around town and we've got even more producers coming in. I was talking with Beth Reblett at Swirl the other day about planning the menu for the New Year's Eve dinner that I do every year at Boucherie. And I could have done, within the budget that we work with for that event, I could have done a menu this year where every single wine that I poured was wine that was not in the market last year.
Wow.
New Year's Eve.
That's how much things are changing. That's
so
great.
Go to your favorite wine shop in your neighborhood and ask them what they've got in. I've seen a lot of this new stuff on the shelves and people are excited about it because, you know, if we can spend less on great wine, it's a win-win.
It's good for everybody, right? And that's a great point. And you know, go patronize some of your local neighborhood bottle shops, because these are the folks that are actually going to have sought out these sparkling wines or these champagnes and brought those in. I think it's a little, and you're going to find them in restaurants and things like that as well. But going to some of the big stores, I don't think you're going to see a lot of this stuff in those spots.
Yeah, most of this doesn't show up on the grocery store shelves.
No, that's more your big house stuff that, like, as we're talking about. Well, so just to kind of circle back or put a, you know, finish on that point. If you had $50 in your pocket, Mike, you can go out and buy yourself a hell of a bottle of champagne for New Year's these days.
Yes, absolutely.
There you go. So there you go. Go into a nice bottle shop with $50 in your pocket and walk out with a nice bottle of champagne. There's your take-home message. So, Mike, you were just talking about something a second ago, too, about you mentioned this in passing a little bit, classes and dinners. What are you up to with Bibliotech? How do people get involved with you, learn more about champagne, and more importantly, drink good champagne?
Yeah, so that's always the goal. So Bibliotech, I started a few years ago to sort of get these wines on people's radar, help them learn about it and understand it, and tell the stories about these wines. I've seen many, many times, you know, over those years that when it finally clicks for people or they hear the story about the wine and whatnot, they're like, oh yeah, wow, this is great. I understand now. I'm gonna, you know, learn more about these. And for me, that's great. And that's part of why things change. As we, you know, as our retailers are moving more of this wine off the shelves and asking for more from the distributors, who in turn have to ask for more from their suppliers, that sends a message, and that's how we get access to more wine in the market. So I always, at any of the events I do, I hope to sort of educate people, but not take all the fun out of it. We certainly like to have fun with it.
Bubbles are fun. You can make it fun.
Yes. So I do classes where we'll sit down and you know, pick a topic or like a Champagne 101 overview sort of thing where we taste a bunch of styles. I've done in-home events for people before who wanted to have that type of thing, but with a smaller group on their own. I do a pop-up champagne bar, basically, periodically over in the old Boucherie space on Jeanette Street. I've worked with those guys for quite a few years now. And, you know, I'm working on some new ideas and new formats for this year coming up, just to try to get this in front of more people and get them as excited about it as I am.
Very much. That's great. Touch on the New Year's one a little bit. I know that you maybe are close, and by the time listeners are hearing this, maybe it's full, but there's a wait list.
Yeah. So this will be the third year in this format, but we've actually been working together a little bit longer than this on that. But with Chef Zemet and James over at Boucherie, we host an all champagne prefix dinner in the old Boucherie space there on Jeanette. We're doing 9 courses this year, 9 different wines, and it's great working with them. Chef has been doing this with me long enough now that he really, really gets pairing food with champagne, and vice versa. And sometimes it starts out with an ingredient, and I figure out a wine to go with it. Sometimes it's been, hey, I really want to get this wine into the menu this year. These are some ideas I have about food, and then out comes the dish, and it's great. So,
will you taste through together occasionally and say and kick ideas around? And,
yes, yeah, and some of them when I do the pop ups, if it's a bottle that I know is going to be a candidate for New Year's Eve, I'll make sure to get that in front of them when I have a bottle open, so that we can even, you know, a few months back could be talking about, you know, how something might work into the menu. So it's great. It's a 9 course prefix. You can call the restaurant to see. We're close to full, but they did say they were going to start a wait list just in case we have any last minute cancellations. And we have fun with it. It's a great meal. It's a great set of wine, and it'll you know, help you really see how these wines work at the table. And not just to throw back as a toast, although we will be throwing back plenty of toasts that night also. Right.
And folks, if you can't, if the dinner is full and you try, and so contact Boucherie is who you would...
For this event.
For this event in particular.
For my upcoming events that I do, you can go to my website, which is bubblyotech.com. I keep my events...
Spell that for people, Mike.
B-U-B-B-L-Y-O-T-H-E-Q-U-E.
And this will be in the show notes, friends, and we'll put it on Facebook, but okay.
Also, on my Facebook page for Bubbliotech, I keep that event site updated. And if you want to just see what I'm up to on a daily basis or where I've been traveling and what I've been drinking, you can always follow at Bubbliotech on Instagram.
Awesome. And you do a good job, by the way. I follow you on Instagram.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I can live sort of somewhat vicariously through you that way. And it's, yeah, I need to hang out with you more, man.
All right.
Well, thanks, Mike. It's a pleasure having you on. And happy holidays, my friend. Happy New Year. Good luck with the dinner.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Friends, we were just chatting with Dr. Michael Nisley of Bubbliotech, talking about champagne. We will certainly have Mike on again in the near future. You know, we're talking about New Year's and champagne. It's a natural fit. We know all that kind of stuff. But I'm a firm believer, and I know Mike is as well, that, you know, any time of year is a good time for champagne. I can eat fried chicken and drink champagne. So, and you can do that any time of year. So we'll make sure that we keep up with Dr. Mike and Bubbliotech and everything else going on with those guys. We're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. I neglected to mention that as we sit here and chat with Mike about champagne. We are in one of our favorite spots here in town, Sylvain Restaurant, here on Charter Street in French Quarter, just off Jackson Square. And when we come back from the break, we're going to be joined by a couple folks from Sylvain just for a little bit here to let us know what they have going on here over the holiday season and here in these winter months. So friends, thanks for tuning into the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Deese here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Come on back.
My book has got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Friends, as you know, if you're listening to my interview with Dr. Mike Knisley of Bubbliotech, we are here at Sylvain Restaurant, 625 Chartist, I believe, if I remember right, right off Jackson Square. And one of my favorite places in town. I've been coming here for really pretty much since they opened. I think I have a butt groove, really, on one of the bar stools over there. Bar One is really one of my favorite places to sit. But I wanted to say thanks to these guys for hosting today and having me here, and I'm pleased to be joined by two of my friends here at Sylvain, Allie Grebe, the general manager. Allie, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. First time on the show.
Yes, I'm very excited.
Absolutely. Glad to have you here. And also Chris Ulueta, who is a host, bar manager, beverage director, bartender. man with a Wheatley vodka hat.
Well, you told me I was Angus Agave, so...
Yes, and you are Angus Agave, which is, I think, one of the finest nicknames that I have ever... Well, let's do the backstory. So you like to wear shorts, and I said that you look like Angus Young in those shorts when you're working behind the bar, because yes. They're schoolboy shorts.
Yep. I think I'm just missing the tie and the button-down.
Yeah, but it works. It's like you're the bartender, and we were calling you Angus Young, and then you went on a trip somewhat recently to Mexico, and you were in Oaxaca and all that area, the land of agave.
Yep.
And you came back enthusiastic about agave.
Yep. I came back sweating out 7 liters of mezcal.
Yes, you did. And so then, therefore, our good friend Jillian White, who runs the beverage program over at Mobar, dubbed you Angus Agave. It's a good nickname, man.
Yeah, we're going to start an agave program here.
I like it. And we'll move on from that topic because it's one of the better nicknames. But we're here at Sylvain. And Allie, actually, tell us a little bit about yourself, because you're fairly new on the scene here, both at Sylvain and in New Orleans, right?
Yes, I am. I have been here for about, I guess I'm coming on 4 months. So.
And you're still here.
I'm still here. but yeah, my husband and I moved down from New York 4 months ago. We were... thinking about moving to Philly, and then we came down here for like a 1 week vacation and said, screw it, why not? We're moving to New Orleans.
Now, had you ever been here when you did that?
No, I had never been before, but okay. We worked at a music venue called Joe's Pub in New York, and music and food were very important to us, and then we came to New Orleans and realized...
Music and
food.
It's
a city of music and food, and we were sold.
Excellent. And then how did you stumble into this nefarious bunch here at the LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group?
There's actually some sort of, I believe now, like portal between New York and Joe's Pub that is Joe's Pub in Sylvain. Chrissy, there's people who used to work here.
Jason North, Chrissy Hagen.
Maggie Morgan.
Maggie Morgan went off too.
Maggie's
from there.
Maggie, okay. A whole crew of New Orleans to New York folk who used the Sylvain Joe's Pub portal. Yeah. So I was lucky enough to hop on board.
Very nice. You transported through the portal.
Absolutely.
That's cool. Uh-huh. Well, Chris, what about you? I mean, I know your deal, but how did you end up here, man?
I ended up here. Mutual friends Holly Durker actually introduced me to Darren and Isaiah.
And who are heading up the beverage program here a few years back.
Yeah, who were basically running the beverage program here. Darren left about a year ago. I met both of them actually at Bacchanal, and we drank a bunch of wine. And Darren approached me and was
this
like,
by happenstance, just hanging out and met him there? Is it?
Holly was like,
Holly?
Yeah, yeah, Holly was basically like, let's, you know, I want you to meet some people. And I was like, I love wine. And met Darren and Isaiah for the first time. And Darren asked me if I wanted to come on. And I was like, yeah. Absolutely.
There you go. And our good friends, so people are clear not to be too insider like a James Joyce novel or something, Holly Durker, who used to work here at Sylvain and is now a manager over at Pearl Wine Company, a nice wine shop, bottle shop over there in Mid-City. Good gal, that Holly Durker.
She is. Cool. Shout out to Holly.
There you go. Shout out to Holly.
Very, very small tenure here, but, you know, I miss her.
Yeah. She made an indelible mark here on Sylvain, that much is certain. And Holly's a great gal. So if you're listening, Holly, we love you. So let's talk a little bit, you guys, what we were meant to talk about. And we got a little bit of time here, a little bit left in this segment. And then the next segment, we are here at Sylvain, as I mentioned. Let's talk a little bit about, we're in the middle of winter. It's the middle of the holidays. So what do we got going on here that we want to make people aware of? Drink, you want to start? We'll start with drinks.
Yeah, if we're going cocktails, I guess our latest menu, there's three in particular, I think, are very wintry, fallish. We put one on the menu last year, actually, when Darren was running show, called Alexander Hamilton. That's a bonded apple brandy, basically Jack Rose variation, with Bekarovka and a Margot Valette as the modifiers.
And grenadine?
We do a pomegranate syrup.
Okay,
that has all of the. Has a little tweaking with orange peel, cinnamon, ginger, but yeah, that's the sweetening agent. Moving on, we've also added the Suntory guys love us for this one particular cocktail, but I basically created a Pimm's hybrid with Pimm's and their Suntory Toki, ginger syrup, citrus, and then we top it off with Fever Tree tonic. Really, really nice Pimm's variation.
What's that called, Chris?
We called it Bang for the Buck because it's a buck variation.
Okay.
/ highball.
Yeah.
So we,
yeah.
Yeah, really, really good press with the Suntory guys. We actually just had all the Suntory crew in here maybe 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and it was a blowout. We had Gardner Dunn, who...
You do remember, Chris, you were supposed to remind me of that, and then you didn't, and I didn't get to come.
It was all over Facebook.
I didn't see it. I'm a little slow on the uptake. It's okay. I forgive you, man.
He came in and carved up some ice balls. We had maybe three or four different sets of ice cubes from Melt New Orleans. I believe it's Chuck Avery's project.
Okay.
Beautiful reverse osmosis, like glass ice. And he was back here with his paring knife, which he gave me at the end of the night. We were both we both went out to Aaron Rose and drank some drinks and talked nothing about whiskey or anything about our industry. We talked about girls, which was I thought was interesting.
Okay, and I know you're big on, you and I converse about the ICE program often.
The ICE program is nobody in New Orleans is kind of doing that level of ice. I don't think there's maybe Loa might carve up balls, but I don't see that too often here. And for us, we're just like too rock and roll. It's too, if it takes 7 minutes to get a cocktail, it stresses me out, you know. So,
right, and that's not, that's not practical, right?
And it's not practical.
Not what the
setup
is here, and
it's So that was nice to see and have my world expanded. We talked a lot about integrity of ice, and I don't want to delve too much into it, but I mean, he showed me a bunch of techniques that were, I was like, maybe in another life, maybe if I lived in Japan.
Right.
Yeah.
And we kind of, you and I kind of joke about it sometimes, but it actually really does matter.
It's very important. It's the first thing I think of, you know, and we here, you know, our company has always been fans of cold draft. Gavin has Hoshizaki, which is my favorite. I wish we had it, but mainly because of the maintenance, but I won't delve too much into integrities of really nice ice machines.
Right. Well, what's the third drink, man?
The third drink is basically, I did a Negroni variation, and I wanted to do something like a more Amargo-ish. At Sylvain, I've kind of prided myself, it's kind of a running joke with Liam and me, like how I'm infatuated with Amaros here. And so if I could have an entire Amaro cocktail list, I would. But that genre in the South specifically, we're a sweet tea nation. So it's tough to, you know, get people to see that world. But here.
And see the variation. And see the world, right? The variety.
See the variations. But so anyways, I did a plantation pineapple, the Stiggins rum,
great
the base. Yep. With I did Berto Bianco, which is a white vermouth, delicious from Artisan Wines here. And then the bittering agent is two different things. I did Braulio Amaro, which is a very vanilla, piney, tastes like the Northwest to me. I used to live in Seattle, and it literally tastes like Seattle to me. And a little bit of allspice dram with a blast of Angostura bitters just to dry out the equation, and little lime twist on top, and it's probably one of our best selling cocktails right now.
What's that one called again, Chris?
We called it the Davy Jones Locker.
Okay.
That's
a good one.
Keep it kind of in the tiki world, and but also open up the possibility of a flavored rum, the best flavored rum in my opinion.
Without a doubt, that plantation pineapple rum is something special.
Yeah, because they actually throw rinds of pineapple actually in the distillate, so it actually has like a green note, or there's a freshness there that you don't get. That's is not confectionery. I guess is the right way to say.
It's very well integrated. Well, let's do this, you guys. We need to take a little break here. We're going to come back. We're chatting with Ellie and Chris from Sylvain. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to over-oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our 6-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today. As you know, well, Happy New Year, friends, and happy holidays to you, because that's coming up really quick. If you're listening here on the radio on Thursday on WGSO, 990 AM in New Orleans, yeah, we're about 3 days away from New Year's. If you're listening to the podcast sometime before New Year's, it's almost New Year's, something like that. You do the math. Happy 2018. We'll leave it at that. We're here at Sylvain here on Charter Street, right in the middle of the French Quarter, and I'm joined by Allie Grebe, general manager, and Chris Zulueta, man behind the stick at the bar. And, well, Chris, let's... finish up before we get into the winter menu stuff. New Year's, you're gonna have some nice bottles you're popping, man.
Yeah, we're gonna have, we're gonna have a few different champagnes. We're gonna be offering three different champagnes, one by the glass. I'm gonna have a few magnums of Dumangin, and yeah, I think we'll roll out a $15 glass price special on it.
Cool.
But yeah, we always have the champagne and fries. We rep the Droppier family really hard here, so. Come
check it out.
Yeah.
Right? You guys are open for brunch and for dinner that evening. Well, Allie, do me a favor. So what's going on the menu these days here, winter menu or in that season?
Our menu is perfect for a Louisiana cold.
That's a relative term.
Yeah, exactly.
Today's about as cold as it gets. We're here on a Tuesday. It's about 52. Like balmy 52.
Yeah, I mean, we still have, the old standby, which is always going to be the beef cheeks. Delicious. If anyone's had them, you know.
Don't mess with the beef cheeks.
Yeah, don't mess with the beef cheeks. Yeah. Don't do it. They're still there. But I think one of the most exciting things that we have that Martha puts out is the daily fish. Every single day, it's something different, and it's always fresh from whatever she's gotten from, our distributors, and it's always something super creative and delicious.
We're talking about executive chef Martha Wiggins here, and now I think you're saying there are three things I think always ask, know what they are. So the daily fresh preparation.
Yeah.
The market salad.
Uh-huh.
And if there's a soup.
Yep. Yeah. It's, you really can't go wrong. In fact, I would say if you were a regular, such as yourself.
I would know nothing about it. These are only things I read on Yelp.
That's right. But if you were someone who lives local, I mean, I would make a habit of just coming in and just ordering whatever one of those three things is each day or all. One or all, because they're always going to be so delicious and so expertly crafted. And I mean, the whole menu is so great, from the pork shoulder to the bolognese, just such faithful standbys. And then to have that rotating door of just things that are out of this world, it's a really solid winter menu.
Yeah, Martha's really, I mean, maybe we use the market salad here as a good example, because the market salad varies nearly daily, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I really like is that you're not trying to force feed the situation to produce the same salad every time. It's very seasonal. It's always very interesting. It's always fresh, and it's always really well prepared.
Yeah. I mean, since I've been here, like I said, for 4 months, I've never seen anything remotely repeated. It's just always a unique creation each day, which is really, really cool.
Martha does a great job. She is a queen. We're going to give a little shout out to our good buddy Adam. There, Adam DeBras, who is a sous chef extraordinaire. I don't know if I've seen him walk in yet, but he's a hero. He's a hero as well.
Absolutely.
So, as far as then, we talk about the winter menu. So there are some things that are old standbys, like we talked about. So the beef cheeks and the bolognese, the burger, chicken sandwich, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All these things that are typically on there, and then. What about the brunch menu? Because you guys do brunch 3 days a week, right?
Yep. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah, the brunch menu is awesome. We've got a scrambled egg toast that's really delicious. It's on brioche. It's my favorite type of bread.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
buttery goodness, of course. to the pork shoulder in the morning is amazing with our homemade hot sauce. You know, it's just everything is, it's a really killer brunch. It's the kind of brunch you can either go have yourself a light meal and go out and win New Orleans, or you can do it the way I like to do it, which is go for it and then go home and take a nap in pure bliss.
I like that. Go large and then go home and lay on the couch and go food coma.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Put a football game on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, drinking tomorrow.
And drinking tomorrow as a digestif after go see Chris at the bar, drinking tomorrow. And that's the way to cap the meal. One of the things that I think is really important at this place, and I have, as I mentioned always, it's a favorite spot I'm patronizing. Had my engagement dinner here, as a matter of fact, and other things. Hospitality is an important part of the LeBlanc Smith restaurant group, and Sylvain is no exception. And Chris, you were talking about this too. Great cocktail program. We have a great food menu here, but there's a practicality here, right? There's a hospitality thing. It's warm, it's welcoming, mm-hmm. but you also, I'm not going to stand there and wait 20 minutes to get a drink with 15 things in it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's very, very priority for us to be the old school bartenders that before the Renaissance happened, be the psychologist, be the, you know.
And you're referring to the so-called craft cocktail Renaissance in 2000-ish, right? Okay.
Just
make sure we're clear on that.
And, you know, if we're going to be frank, like, craft cocktail bars don't make as much money as dive bars.
Right.
Like,
absolutely.
It's,
absolutely.
So the happy medium, in my opinion, you know, is what we're trying to do here. Like, we try to turn out cocktails. We try to be known for cocktails, but we also try to be known for efficiency and still be, when I, you know, first started in the industry, I mean, it was a vodka bar. Like, there was no... Like, we had, like, 20 different vodkas, and it was literally...
And this is in Seattle, Chris? Right?
This was actually in Tennessee.
In Tennessee, okay.
And, yeah, I mean, all I did was shake cold liquor. And people wouldn't, you know, obviously they would come to me thinking that was a good drink, but that wasn't the reason why people visited you. People visited you because you were memorable, and you gave them an experience that happened pre... you know, cocktail Renaissance.
Right.
I think
right.
that's the beauty of Sylvain, is that the balance here is really unmatched. It's just a place where you know you're going to get good cocktails and good food, and the people are friendly, and everyone's been here forever, but that the quality and the integrity is also there, which is hard to find and really cool.
Yeah, and you know, and Allie, and I appreciate you saying that. I think that's one of the things that you're probably learning as you spend more time here in the city, is that that's an important component that sometimes is ignored in other parts. I don't want to say ignored, but not as taken as seriously. It's not at the same level of the pedestal as the drinks and the food. It's the hospitality, the vibe, mm-hmm. the service, presenting a room. Any spot worth its salt in this city has that on equal footing with anything else. And this place demonstrates that.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be, you know, not everything has to be fancy to be good.
Oh, so no, quite the contrary.
That's the Sylvain.
Yeah. And what
magic.
Doesn't, exactly. Anywhere that I think we've seen a lot of places that have come to New Orleans as well that bring this sort of, we're going to teach New Orleans how it's done attitude.
Right, right.
And we're too cool for school.
Totally.
And that doesn't really fly. So it doesn't, you know, if you go to some of the, you know, old school restaurants, you go to Galatoire's, you go to Pascal's Manali, some of these places here in town, these places are not about pomp and circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
They're about hospitality mm-hmm. and warmth and great service.
Right.
Don't get me wrong, and great food and great drink. But it's not about, you know, I'm going to present to you only things that I know and give you this dish that you're going to eat and you're going to like it.
Right, exactly.
It's not that kind of thing. It doesn't fly here in this city.
Totally.
Absolutely. Well, you guys, we got about a minute left. Tell us where we can actually, 625 Chartist, right? Do I have that right? You think I kind of know that by now. But tell people where we find it online and Facebook and all that good stuff.
You can go online to www.sylvainnola.com.
S-Y-L-V-A-I-N.
Uh-huh. Yep. N-O-L-A.com. Or you can call us for reservations, 504-265-8123. Or go online to Open Table. But I'll always be on the other line if you come.
Open for dinner 7 nights a week and open for lunch, brunch, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Allie, Chris, thanks for taking some time out today. I know you guys got to get the restaurant open here on a Tuesday, so I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Friends, check out Sylvain. We're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. We're going to be back to close things out with you. Come on back.
Catholic church bells toll the Louisiana blues.
oyster rake scraping down Grand Isle Way. Don't get no more salty than Barataria Bay. 100 years my family's done it this way. Some folks call it work, but it's just another day. And in life there's always love.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today. And if you've been listening for any period of time today or for the past year and a half here with Noah Drinks, I certainly appreciate your support and listening in. Look forward to, as I said at the top of the show, having a terrific 2018. I hope to bring you more interesting stuff, guests, topics, material. Hey, let us know. Go to our Facebook page there at just Noah Drinks on Facebook. Pretty easy to find. There's a topic that you'd like to see us tackle loosely, I'll say loosely, connected to the world of drink and food. We're happy to do that. You know, we obviously talk about things, not just drink and food itself, but we talk about social issues in the industry. We talk about trends, traditions, history, have interesting guests. We bring in, of course, other parts of the cultural tapestry, as I like to say here in New Orleans, that it's all inextricably linked to food and drink, music, all this stuff. We can't separate these things here in New Orleans, friends. It's all one big thing. So let us know what you want to hear. So as I said at the top of the show, friends, I'm not much of a predictor, but talk about a few things that I'd like to see in 2018 and a few things I'd like to see go away in 2018. And probably many of these things are wishful thinking. Of course, we start with a positive. As we roll into 2018, the tricentennial, yes, the 300th year anniversary of the city of New Orleans, all kinds of cool stuff coming up. We'll be all over that stuff. So that's going to be really cool. And I hope everyone has a great 2018. But come see us in New Orleans. If you're not from here, don't live here, check us out. We're going to have all kinds of great, great stuff going on all year long to celebrate the tricentennial of the city. Okay, some things I'd like to see go away, friends. Some of these really stupid beer commercials and other stuff where they say, you know, their whole advertising campaign is around bringing back the original packaging. So such and such beer, you know, Light Beer from Miller did this recently. We brought back the original packaging for a limited time. Okay, so what? It's still the same beer in the bottle. There's other ways to go about it. I like history and tradition, but just, you know, making that your only sales ploy in this whole thing is, oh, I better go get a six-pack of Miller Lite while it's in the original bottle. Okay, great. Want to see that kind of go away. Kind of related to that, the dusty origin story, as I like to call it, and that was a coined term from a little bit while ago in the spring of this year, talking about these made-up stories about, you know, the great heroism of whoever founded the distillery or the brewery. And, you know, some of these things are basically just BS, frankly, or a real mistelling of history or misrepresentation of the true story. like to see that stuff go away. Again, history, tradition, the story is great, don't get me wrong, but this just becomes so cheesy, these TV commercials that are supposed to be throwback and they use the filters that make it look like, you know, Chili springs to mind, where they make it supposedly it's the 70s. It's not the 70s. They just filmed it about 6 months ago. So anyway, I'd like to see that kind of stuff go away. Probably not going to happen. I'd like to see, and this has kind of been a trend that's going away, but the continued trend of the pretentiousness in the world of drink and food would be great. You know, we all break bread together. It's been a social thing for thousands of years, drinking and eating and this sort of thing communally. And, you know, this stuff's not shrouded in mystery. This stuff is not rocket science. So the pretension of, say, some sommeliers or the celebrity chef stuff and these things, like to kind of see that go away. Let's just get back to the roots where we sit at a table or a bar, friends, and we eat and we drink together. We laugh. We have a good time. Enjoy a good bite. Enjoy a good drink. Those are the three things I'd kind of like to see go away. Some things I'd like to see actually happen, really, or maybe will happen. You know, we've had a rough year for restaurants in the city, as we know. This past year has been pretty tough, really going back about a year and a half. We've done lots of shows on that, talking about that. I think what we may see is there has been a bit of a correction. And why I'm saying this, I hope people don't, you know, seeing businesses fail sucks. Okay, people lose jobs, people invest their savings to open up a place. I hope we're finding a footing here where the places that do open are smart in how they open, they're successful, we're not overly redundant with copycat restaurants. I hope we've kind of found a little bit of a balance here where it's not just if you build it, they will come. It's a lot harder than that. We've talked a lot about that on the show. One of the things I think we may see is some of the more established restaurant groups and entities leading the way in opening new spots. I actually think we're going to see that coming. I kind of know we're going to see that coming in 2018 with some of the new spots. Longway Tavern, Kristen Essig and Michael Stoltzfus there are opening up their new spot. A few other folks will be out there doing some. Nina Compton's opening up a new spot where Maritza used to be there. Of course, she's of Compare La Pan. So I think we're going to kind of see a little bit more of that stuff. I'd like to see us to continue to have some interesting things like in the world of alcohol, interesting spirits and things, and some of these craft spirits that we're getting from Europe and stuff being made here in the States, craft distilleries. Really like to see that stuff continue to be able to taste interesting things. But I also want to see the esotericness, if you will, being balanced by, you know, kind of remembering what we already have. We don't necessarily always need to see the next great thing, weird spirit, and get that into as many cocktails as possible. You know, a lot of good stuff out there, a lot of good stuff that's been out there for a long time, discovering that stuff and just kind of remembering the classic drinks, the ones that are made with great balance and all that good stuff. Like to see that kind of work its way into a nice little give and take, if you will. The new, the interesting, along with remembering the old and what works. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think we're going to see, you know, hopefully some more trends in local with beer and that sort of thing, the trends towards local distilleries and craft breweries, true craft breweries. I think that's something I'd really like to see is some truth in advertising as far as, what's really a craft brewer as opposed to somebody that's owned by, you know, one of the big houses and pretends not to be. Just this past year, for just using beer as an example, we passed over 6,000 breweries in the country. That's a 700 more breweries than we had in 2016, and that's double that of 4 years ago. This is according to VinePair, which is actually through the Brewers Association. 83% of drinking age Americans now live within 10 miles of a brewery. Wow. So, you know, the whole idea then to me is, yeah, get out and support that, because that's local jobs, right? That helps the local tax base. That's local jobs. It's connecting you. Oftentimes these beers are made with a, you know, local ingredients, of course, seasonal ingredients, connecting, you know, beer styles that go with the food. And, you know, I think wine's kind of the same. Distilleries are kind of the same here. So I'd like to see that trend continue. I'd like to see the local, because it's good for our economy. It's good for our culture. It allows visitors to come and see what we're all about and represent in a different way. It builds tourism. It really does. You know, you drop a distillery or you drop a brewery somewhere and it works and can even support, if it's a destination, can support some of the local restaurants around it, can support some of the local shops around it, that sort of thing. So yeah, that local thing, that's good. Support local. And there's an initiative to label, at least in the States, truly independent craft brewers and independent breweries, label the bottles with a seal so you know that what you're buying is actually owned by a local guy. Like to see continued social change in the industry, the hospitality, food and drink industry. Really important. I think we're starting to address these questions more seriously, addressing issues of sexual harassment. A lot of that has, of course, been in the news. We know that. We've talked about that here on the show, and you've heard that elsewhere. Making it sure that everybody, regardless of their gender, their sexual orientation, the color of their skin, their background, their religion, whatever, has an opportunity to work in the hospitality industry, succeed in the hospitality industry, grow in the hospitality industry. And when I say hospitality industry, I mean the drink and food industry and everything as well. continuing that dialogue that has become more open, has become more honest, is a critical, critical thing. I'd like to see great organizations like here in New Orleans support a group like Cafe Reconcile or Cafe Hope that are giving opportunities to folks who maybe wouldn't have opportunities to advance in the hospitality and food and beverage industry here in New Orleans, develop those skills, remove barriers, get out there and do that stuff. That's really, really, really important. I can't stress how I hope that that continues. We continue to have this honest dialogue. I promise you here at NOLA Drinks, we will continue to have that dialogue in 2018. You know, kind of related to that, Tales of the Cocktail has been purchased by a good friend of the show, Neil Bodenheimer of The Cure Group that owns Cure Uptown and also the bar Cane and Table on Decatur in the French Quarter, and along with the Solomon family have purchased Tales of the Cocktail. I find that to be a very positive change. We've talked a lot about Tales, but that's connected. I'd like to see Tales get back to what it should be, just a good trade show. And if you're going to address social issues and some of these things, that's great, but you need to do it where you bring in the experts to do it. You need to run it better than it was run before. There needs to be, you got to have your eyes open if you're Tales of the Cocktail and understand the industry a little bit better and not just to be kind of trying to be a fiefdom or trying to be everything in the industry. So I think that's a really positive change. I'd like to see that happen as well. So those are just some things that I'd like to see happen. I'd like to see maybe go away. What I forgot to mention, go away, listicles. All right, stop with the listicles and stop with the top 10 lists. I've said that 100 times. It just doesn't, work, right? You know, the listicles, top 10 places to go do this now. It's when something opens, you're in the top 10 list. And when something closes and goes out of business, top 10 list or something like that, you know, places that just closed. Let's just remember who does things well, does it consistently well. Maybe they've done it consistently well for over 100 years, like a lot of spots we have in New Orleans. Check that stuff out. All right, I'm going to circle right back to the positive. I hope everyone has a great 2018. Please be safe out there, friends. The weather's looking a little sketchy, at least in this part of the world, off and on through the new year. Have a designated driver. Take a, you know, a cab, take Lyft, take Uber, one of those. Be safe, okay? Be courteous. Everybody gets a little stressed out these times. I know we're past Christmas, but everybody can get a little stressed. So, you know, take a deep breath. It's all chill. Let's all just walk around. Let's all just smile. Let's all just eat and drink. Let's enjoy things. Let's enjoy each other's company. And let's ring in the new year. I hope 2018 is a great year for you, your friends, your loved ones, everyone else. I hope to break bread and share a drink with you next year. And again, I really appreciate the support here at NOLA Drinks. And I hope you tune in 2018. And hey, tell a friend about us. So friends, happy 2018. And really wish you the best. And until then, cheers and happy new year, y'all.